This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to In Focus. I'm Roger Gray. Good to have you with us. And we're visiting with an old friend, a gentleman we spoke to, several months ago. I think early in the year, I believe. Robert Dybek is with us. He heads up the GHQ Military Museum. Welcome. Good to have you back.
No, thanks. Glad to be back.
Appreciate it. And this is a museum unlike what you generally picture as a museum, because Robert's whole concept is to bring it to your event, to bring it to your business or whatever the celebration may be. It's a mobile military museum. First of all, how did you get this idea to make it mobile, to not sit in the building and wait for people to come to you?
Well, when I was still working approximately 9 years ago, I looked into some ideas on how to get our military history out to the public. And, you know, I knew I couldn't afford a brick and mortar. Plus, I was working full time in another career.
Yeah.
So I did some research and found out that mobile museums, they're few, but they are out there. So with a little research and filing some information, I was able to incorporate in 2016.
And that was, and I'm forgetting where you lived originally. That was
Chicago.
In Chicago, okay. I should have heard that in the voice, actually. You know, was it an idea that resonated with people?
It did. You know, I had many of my friends that I had served with in the military that helped out. They were volunteers for me. A lot of the public. I mean, there's a lot of veterans. It's a major metropolitan city. You know, there's a national cemetery out there. It really kicked off very well. We got a lot of donations right off the get-go and built a lot of displays and went from there.
Tell me a little bit about your background. When did you serve?
I'm a Gulf War guy. So right after 9/11. I was deployed twice. I served in two different branches my entire military career. Started in the Navy, and I left in the Army, and also had 4 years of Air Force ROTC in high school.
And I may have mentioned before, I was actually covering the Gulf War while you were in it. So a little kinship there anyway. But I was watching the Scuds come in and all that stuff. Where do you get that? You've got a pretty good collection of equipment. I don't know what people think is going to be delivered when you come to set up a display, but you're literally setting up a museum.
Right. With the space that we have and the collection we have, we can set up a lot of things are all behind glass or plexiglass. They're all on rolling mounts. They're in cases. We use realistic-looking mannequins when we have displays of uniforms and equipment that's all labeled and defined, as well as just the histories. You know, we offer a quick read poster boards of each conflict, World War II, World War I. If you want to learn the short history of it, we provide that.
You were telling me you're thinking, and correct us if we're wrong here. We just lost a local World War II veteran.
Yes, our one in Wood County, which is where we're at. Our, as far as we know, our last World War II combat veteran passed away yesterday. He was 100 years old, about to be 101. Served in Iwo Jima, Saipan, Tinian. Served with Lee Marvin, the movie actor. it's a blow. I mean, we're losing our World War II guys so fast now. The few that are left, 5 more years, it's going to be hard to find one.
Yeah, when you consider how many people were drafted, volunteered, it was millions of guys and women in the nursing corps and in the WACs. What, 80 years ago now?
Yeah, so, well, at least, yeah.
Yeah. And you figure most of them probably were 19, 20, something like that. So, yeah. Time, it takes a toll. And it's all, I think it's a good argument. It nothing to do with the museum, but it's a good argument to get the stories out before it's too late. If your granddad served or whatever, your dad served, get the stories now. Get that info now, because there will come a time when you wish you could ask and you can't.
Right. And if we don't record those stories and have that memorabilia for people to see and learn about, you know, it just doesn't exist then. Nobody knows about it. And the families, they want their family members to be remembered. That's why we get a lot of these collections, because rather than sit in a closet, you know, they want their family's service to be out there for people to learn about.
How did it start for you? You were in the military, obviously. I believe you were a law enforcement officer as
yes.
well.
Yeah, 28 years.
When did it suddenly occur to you to say, you know, maybe if I collect some helmets and rifles and flags and uniforms and so forth? How did it start for you? What was the germ of the idea?
Well, I've always been a history person and a military person. You know, everybody in my family that I can remember, at least the male members going back to the Civil War, have served in, mm-hmm. you know, every conflict that I can come up with just about. My grandfather's one on one side was PT boats, World War II. The other one was tank destroyers in Europe.
Huh.
So it's always been interesting to hear the stories and talk to, you know, the veterans and those that have served, and the interest that was always something of the past. You know, I thought, well, let's keep this history alive. You know, there's got to be a need for it. We don't want to see it going into landfills.
And again, you talk about the PT boats in World War II. It immediately made me think, we've all seen the movies and so forth. What we forget is that a lot of those guys, it was a different time. A lot of those guys served as well. Elizabeth Montgomery from Bewitched, her father was a PT boat commander, a very popular actor. You think of Tyrone Power, Clark Gable, Ted Williams hung up his baseball career for a couple of years. It was a time everybody went. And if you didn't go, you felt a little ashamed.
Right. I mean, yeah. There's towns that, I mean, if you watch Band of Brothers series, you know, the interviews with those veterans.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some of them guys said that they've had guys in their towns that were 4F that couldn't qualify. You know, they committed suicide. It was an honor to serve at the time. I mean, I've met several of the actors. I've met Mickey Rooney. I've mm-hmm. met Ernest Borgnine, Navy veteran, World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So even our Hollywood people back then were...
And, of course, Jimmy Stewart. Yeah, everybody knows, mm-hmm. you know, bomber pilot in Europe. Yeah. It was a different time. And preserving that, I have good friends with the Commemorative Air Force, for example, when I was in my Houston days. That's their goal, is to keep all of that alive in people's minds here, when you can see and touch something. So how did you start gathering the gear, the weapons, et cetera?
Well, I always had a small collection of stuff of my own. I've had guys that I served with have donated stuff. And then it was just a matter of getting the word out through the local newspapers, them doing articles, radio stations, emails, veterans groups, Legion Halls, VFWs. And then, you know, the information would get out there, and then they would contact me, and I'd go out to see what they had and build from there.
Because a lot of the guys brought stuff home, you know. Everybody wanted a souvenir. A good friend of my father's showed me a Japanese Arisaka rifle that he had brought back. I don't know how he got it. Got it through, you know, the Army and got it, you know, in his personal possession. But they found a way. And so guys would hear about you and let you know, I've got some gear, got my old uniform, I got a helmet, you know, et cetera.
Right, right. You know, our community organizations, I'd do a little presentation for them, and there was always somebody would walk up and say, you know, I have my dad's World War II uniform, or his footlocker, or we have some of this, you know, and that's where it begins. And, you know, we start putting together displays from there.
Yeah, I was looking at the pictures on your website, and folks, I would recommend you go there. Look up GHQ Military Museum. I mean, you even have, down to the day-to-day stuff, canteens, mess kits, just the day-to-day stuff that a GI, a Marine, you know, a sailor would be part of their daily lives, you know, when they were deployed.
Yeah. Right. Food rations. We mm-hmm. have food ration displays and, you know, footlocker displays. What would be in a normal footlocker for a mm-hmm. soldier?
And if you think about it, I bet I have it somewhere. I was going through my grandparents' stuff, and I found their old World War II ration book. Here stateside, how much sugar you could get, tires, gasoline, everything was rationed, and you had a little book of coupons that you used for that. It's all emblematic of that period and the sacrifice.
Right. Yeah. You know, they needed materials to supply the troops, so they, you know, rationed everything. I mean, gasoline, you know, depending on what your importance was to the war effort, was how many gallons of gasoline you were allowed per week.
Mm-hmm. And you may look great in nylon hose, but he needs a parachute. That's where all the nylon and silk went.
Yep, yeah. Cigarettes, you know, and you name it.
Mm-hmm. So, periodic over the years, when did you start? I'm just out of curiosity. When did you start focusing on, I'm going to collect the stuff?
Probably October 2016 when I registered to the museum. That's when I really started pushing for donations. Mm-hmm. And
so the donations came in. I gather you have, what kind of gear? What kind of rifles, for example?
My specialty is our American history. So mm-hmm. if somebody donates a foreign services stuff, German, Japanese, we'll take it because it's part of military history.
Sure.
But we really don't display that much. Weapons-wise, I have some small arms, American stuff from World War I through Vietnam. Through Vietnam. It's hard to get. A lot of people don't donate that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just value in it. So it's not something that they say, here's my dad's M1 Garand rifle.
Yeah, that's sentimental value.
Right.
It's hard to part with. But if it's sitting in a closet, nobody will ever know about your dad.
Right.
You know? So that's that. You can sort of perpetuate his memory that way. But right now... you have some needs as far as the museum goes, and that is a way to get this stuff to people.
Right. When I was up north, we had a nice enclosed cargo trailer that all the exhibits were transported in to whoever requested it. You know, we were setting up at schools, we were at churches, we were at national museums, we set up at local museums, retirement communities, veterans homes,
mm-hmm.
you know, public events. You know, reunions, you name it, you know, we bring that stuff wherever it's requested. But down here, ever since we've been down here, it's been a tough battle raising the funds to get another cargo trailer because the one we had up north could not come down here.
Okay. Which is a little surprising because we have, particularly East Texas, I was told, I forgot who told me that, East Texas has a huge veterans population. There's a veterans retirement home right up here in Smith County. Yeah. So I covered the opening of it. There's a large population here. How does a museum work? Let's say you have an event coming up, county fair, whatever, and you'd love to have this as part of the presentation. What do you do?
Well, hopefully somebody, you know, they find us through, you know, search or for word of mouth or whatever, and they contact us normally is what how it would go.
Right.
And we would look at our schedule, and if we have availability, then we'll schedule them. And, you know, we'll go out, we'll kind of reconnaissance to see what space we have, how we're going to display our routes coming in, you know, so we can be there.
Send out your scouts, yeah.
Know what we're doing. But down here without the cargo trailer, it's really tied us up.
Mm-hmm.
I can only come out and do small presentations with what I can fill in a full-size truck, which is pickup truck, which is roughly, you know, several folding tables and some mannequins and odds and ends.
Yeah. You do have your, it looks like a Jeep, but it's technically a Mutt. It's an M151 little vehicle. It was a successor to the old M38 Jeep.
Right. It was a Vietnam era. Mm-hmm. It's called a Mutt, multi-use tactical truck. Even though it's the size of a Jeep,
yeah.
It's their nomenclature.
And most people would look at it and say, oh, it's a Jeep. No, it's actually a Ford.
Right, but, right.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a successor to the early 50s Jeep, late war, early 50s Jeep. And you have one that you bring.
Right. That's actually something I restored before I even began the museum. I was able to purchase one from a veteran up in Michigan, went and got it, and it took me 2 years to restore it. And then we use it for parades, static exhibits. Mm-hmm. It's even great for advertising at a car show because we can get word out about the museum.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So if you have a car, well, there's a car show here every year, and if you have a dealership opening or a big sale or a big event you want, it's available for that. Particularly, if people find out it's a Ford, the Ford dealer is interested. But yeah, I mean, I guess is that kind of the centerpiece of your displays? I bet that's what everybody goes to first.
Vehicle-wise, it is. You got the guys out here with deuce and a halfs and the big five tons, and they're cool to look at, but everybody loves the Jeep because you can kind of look around in it. You can see it. It brings back a lot of memories of the smaller era stuff. I've approached dealerships to say, hey, you do a military appreciation week. Put it on your showroom floor with these big display cabinets that were also providing that cover World War One through present day.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great advertisement idea, but we're not getting too many takers at the moment.
Well, we'll see if we can't gin that up a little bit. So where do you keep it when it's not being used, not being displayed?
I have a enclosed building where we work out of. So that's where all the exhibits and the mud's stored, and we, do all our design and builds from there.
Mm-hmm. If folks go to the website and look at the gallery, you've got lots of uniforms, for example, Army, Air Force, Navy. It looks like all the services are covered there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we cover everything. We a little short on Coast Guard, and we have nothing on Space Force as of yet. But, the big four, we're covered pretty well, and we have World War One through present day.
Oh, wow. And those, when you go back to World War One, you're talking about preserving now, trying to keep them, in good shape.
Right. And then find stuff. Find a pair of World War One shoes. I just recently found a place that does replicas, for reenactors. So I was able to obtain to do a World War One mannequin.
To get the right boots.
Right.
Yeah. It's folks, if you go to the website, you'll see what we're talking about. It's a super, super display. And right now, your big need is a trailer. So if somebody out there wants to donate, you have a GoFundMe page, right?
We do have a GoFundMe backup. We had some issues with it, with GoFundMe. Somehow they closed it out on us, but we got it reinstated and got all of that straight.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do go to the GoFundMe, if you put GHQ Military Museum in there, it's not going to pop up because the guy that my PR guy put it in there a different way. So just type in mobile museum or mobile military museum, and it'll pop up that way.
Okay. Or if you have a suitable trailer that you don't need anymore, or you're a dealer, either way, it would enable Robert to get the stuff. I'm guessing particularly young people need to see a lot of this, really. It's going to bring back memories for a lot of the old vets, but for young people to see, this is, the stuff you've seen in the movies, this is it.
Right.
Yeah.
And with the younger people, like when we go to the schools, we bring things for them to actually, they can touch and feel. Helmets they can put on, flak jackets. They can turn the old field phones, and talk to each other.
Uh-huh.
So it helps them to learn even more.
The field phones work?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Yeah, we do all kinds of that. And it's a definite critical need, and it's at this point it's going to be a make or break if the museum's going to continue, because we can't advertise properly and we can't get the exhibits out there without that one item.
Yeah, I don't know why I hadn't thought about schools. I mean, that is such a logical venue for showing this stuff. You come right out of your history class, and here it is. Here's the history right in front of you. You can touch it.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And we've had some inquiries from schools, but like other places, Grand Prairie, Texas wanted me to come out this Veterans Day and bring everything.
Yeah.
You know, that's a couple hours away from where we're at, which is fine. We don't mind it. But I had to tell them recently we still haven't obtained a trailer, and that limits us because we can't tell people we're out there. And then they call and say, we want you, but we can't, without a trailer,
right.
We'll never hear from them again.
Yeah.
So we're in a catch-22.
Yeah. So the trailer is essential right now. We need to get that squared away. And then Robert's stuff is available for anybody who wants to see it. What kind of reactions do you get, particularly from young people? I'm curious about that. Do they wow, this helmet is heavier than I thought, or whatever.
It's, you know... And a lot of people, you know, they think, well, you know, young people, they don't like the history. They're not interested in it. They only want, you know, to be on phones and stuff like that. In some cases, maybe, but everybody that we've had come see our displays have enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. We haven't had any negative complaints, even the little ones. We've seen them sit down, take pictures of stuff, ask questions. Even our, like, Sea Cadets we had out there. Even the one that they said was their most rowdy, salty sea cadet loved the exhibits because they're learning. They're seeing the actual history. They're not looking at it on a computer screen. They actually see it in 3D.
Yeah, I was, as you said that, I was thinking, remembering taking my daughter, she's 28 now, but when she was a little bitty, walked through an aircraft museum in Galveston. We're living down in Houston. She was fascinated, absolutely fascinated. I forced her to sit through war movies with me as she grew up, but kids are fascinated with that stuff, boys and girls.
Right, yeah. I mean, we get the same response, whether it is a boy or a girl. They do enjoy it, and we do make sure that we include a lot of female items. I have items from Navy Waves, Army Wax.
Mm-hmm.
We're always looking for more female military veteran stuff. But, you know, we make sure that we have something to offer for everyone.
One of my jobs in Houston years ago, that's my hometown, I worked for the owner of the Houston Post, who was a Vita Culp Hobby, who was the head of the wax in World War II. Roosevelt named her to head up the Women's Army Corps, first head of the Corps. Some of the incredible work, the nurses, everybody, and Rosie the Riveter here on the stateside. There is something for everybody. Keeping it all, preserving it all, is that tough?
It is.
Particularly the uniforms, I'm guessing, the cloth, you know.
Right. You know, moths love wool. And,
yeah.
You know, we keep everything in plastic or it's behind plexiglass until it's out for display.
Mm-hmm.
Humidity is a big thing out here. You know, we don't do mold and stuff like that. So, you know, the building we have, even though it is essentially weathertight, you know, we are working on trying to get it more climate controlled, you know, with dehumidifiers and such. But so far, so good. Everything's holding up well.
Okay. Some of the other gear. Tell me some of the other gear. I know I saw helmets. Little of everything.
Right. You name it. I mean, whatever gear that, you know, the military used during those times, you know, we have samples of a lot of it. The Navy stuff, not so much. It was large. It was on ships. It really didn't survive when they scrapped out that stuff. You know, so it's more uniform based and small stuff that a sailor would have in his personal effects.
Mm-hmm.
But Army and Marines, we have radios, we have, you know, weapons, we have all kinds of equipment. We have model dioramas depicting battle scenes.
Saw a beautiful model of a B-17 in your photographs.
Right. You know, and you know, just all kinds of whatever we can get, you know. A lot of it we try to buy when we get a chance because some of the stuff, people just don't have that kind of stuff in their closets.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, because we want to make things more interesting. But we do what we can with our meager budget, and, you know, that's our biggest Achilles heel at this moment.
Well, sure. And it's understood. But in addition to the need for the trailer, if you have some of Uncle Ralph's personal effects from the war, you're probably love to look at it and see if it might fit with the displays.
Sure. It doesn't matter. You know, if you have just a couple patches that, you know, somebody had, a family member, or if you have a complete, you know, collection of their service. We're looking for it because the more complete we can actually do a exhibit on that person, especially with family members that can help us with biographies. If it's just a couple items, we can at least use it to complete a collection, mm-hmm. or, you know, have it on display with other similar items.
And we mentioned the weapons. From World War II, I'm assuming, the Garand, the carbine.
M1 carbine.
And you have a Springfield?
I do have a 1903 Springfield. And I was lucky enough many years ago to get that on a garage sale off of a table for $125. Try and find one now.
Find one now, yeah, for that. Particularly one that's legitimate provenance, you know.
Right. I have a GI-45. We have
probably a revolver from World War One.
Yeah. The old 38s. We have a M16 from Vietnam. We have an M60 machine gun from Vietnam. Mm. Weapon-wise, I have a French World War One rifle because, in World War One we weren't really equipped, so we used a lot of French and British
mm-hmm. equipment. Yeah. Probably a Lebel, I'm betting, but, yeah.
I think you're right.
I think that's it, yeah.
Then I do have, a Japanese Arisaka. I do have a German K-98 Mauser that was given to me.
So yeah, that was their standard infantry rifle, yeah.
Right.
You can hear if you're a gun guy, if you're a history person, you can just hear from this list. This is going to be a nostalgia trip for you. This is going to be walking through history.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And especially for gun stores. If you want to help support us. By specifically helping us obtain water cooled 30 caliber. Or a 50 caliber. We know where they make replica ones. There's a company that does museum quality.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about, us having anything real, but it's as accurate as you can get. We need assistance to obtain those.
Yeah. I asked about the kids. We've got a couple of minutes left, but I asked about the kids. What about the vets that walk up to one of your displays? What kind of interactions have you had with those folks?
Very, very well. We've had Vietnam vets cry because, when they came home, they didn't have a good homecoming like
when they came home. You didn't get a parade like WW2. Yeah.
Right. So they really appreciate, that their stuff is out there and they're being represented. I had a guy from Vietnam come up on a little three-wheel scooter and slapped his hand on the top of my M60 machine gun and just started going. Stories. He was a squad gunner in Vietnam, and he had not seen one since then, and he had to come up and touch it. And then when he was done, he just went off about his business.
Yeah. There is something about touching it, isn't there? I don't know what it is. I have hanging on my wall a Civil War Springfield. 1863 Springfield says 1863 on the lock plate, and just holding it. Whenever I take it down and just hold it, you realize some guy at Gettysburg probably held this thing.
Right. Yeah.
There's something about the tactile part of it.
Right. We have a Union musket from Wisconsin. It was donated by a Vietnam veteran, and you wonder. It was actually used, so you wonder, where it was at, who used it. It makes you think.
Yeah. So, folks, we're out of time. The GHQ Military Museum, they need your help. They need a trailer. They need displays. Whatever you can do to help, they will be available for all of the things we've been talking about, all of the events we've been talking about, all of the schools we've been talking about. How do they get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me through the website. Just type in GHQ Military Museum. You can Google it or .com. You could also watch our YouTube video by just putting in GHQ Military Museum for more information, our KLTV interview. And or you can contact me by phone, 708-932-6659.
We will have all that information for you. It'll be on our website when this is posted after it airs. Robert, thank you again.
No, I appreciate
it very much. It's always a pleasure. And we will see you guys next week.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio. And we thank you for listening. Join us again next week.